Greetings, and welcome to this relatively brief analysis that is an updated version in English of the one that I released in Italian recently, where I dwelled on the recent attention paid by Italian and foreign media to that certain institutional confusion that seems to have arisen in Italy over the management of the current pandemic. Notably, in the management of the healthcare system around Milan, and most notably in the town of Bergamo, but also relating to the severe and protracted restrictions placed against the movement of Italians locked down nationwide in their places for over 2 months, and anyway within their municipality, and still today without the possibility of leaving the region where they find themselves. Regioni being the 20 political and administrative subdivisions of first level that Italy is divided into. For instance, the world-famous Tuscany with Florence, but also Veneto with Venice, Lombardy with Milan, or Sicily with Palermo. Not to mention, of course, the dispute that opposes the central government and local administrations of the Regioni on who decides and pays for what, in a quarrel that often sees common sense defeated by the sense of the commons. Indeed, the chaos that has been reported is often more unnecessary media trumpeting than anything. However, the fact that media can trumpet about something so often implies that there is at least an opportunity to do so. And it is indeed true that there is an institutional tension in the relationship between central government in Rome and the local administrations of the Regioni. See, for instance, the quite glaring instance of Italy's Presidente del Consiglio, literally translated as Chairman of the Council of the Ministers, which in current English goes with the not very proper translation of Premier or Prime Minister, but he's really nothing of the sort. In Italy, which is a so-called parliamentary republic, this post has, under the constitution, no power whatsoever, being just a connecting point between the parliament, the government, understood as the ensemble of the ministers, and the president of the republic. Anyway, in light of the extraordinary situation brought by the pandemic, and the fact that the current decision-making process in a parliamentary republic with two equal houses of parliament is not the fastest, or also that the political class at large, in general these days, and in Italy in particular in this case, is poorly equipped at dealing with complex technical and scientific issues, Giuseppe Conte, that is the name of our current premier, who happens to be a civil law lawyer and professor and did not run for election but has been chosen after extensive negotiations twice in a row already by partly different parliamentary majorities. Well, Mr. Conte has carved a space for himself in this situation, and over the past 2 months he's got as accustomed that he shows up on Friday or Saturday around prime time for a press conference, which of course is picked up by all media simultaneously, hence we could consider this a weekly television address to the nation, something that in Italy is very, very unusual for the premier to do. And during this press conference, he illustrates the decree that he's just enacted, or he's about to enact, by passing Parliament, making use of a very specific and quite unusual legislative procedure that is nevertheless possible in times of emergency. Besides aspect of appropriateness or legitimacy, what here matters is that the move is clearly dictated by the need, real or alleged as it might be, to give a quick answer to an exceptional situation. However, this works only to an extent. In fact, while the move bypasses Parliament, it does not prevent the presidents of the 20 regioni, which to be clear are nothing like governors in the United States, to issue a couple of hours before or after the Prime Minister's address regional ordinances which partly follow the decree but partly say slightly different things, in what results in normative chaos where no one is able to understand much of what a citizen can or cannot do in a time of emergency. For instance, in Tuscany, since the beginning of the pandemic, the president of the Regione has issued about 60 ordinances, which roughly equates to one every 2 days. In one regione, you're currently supposed to wear the protective mask at all times when outside of your home. In another, only in closed areas of public places and businesses. In yet another, it is just a general and non-mandatory recommendation. And there you find yourself in a train journey, which will be at last possible again from next week, changing, however, region basically every 30 minutes with the rules that keep changing. And you're supposed to know all of this. This is, to put it in academic terms, crazy, as no one, not even skilled lawyers, can keep up with this malpractice, which is, of course, shameful. In sum, there's quite a confusion over who's got the power to determine what, between sanitary measures and the regulations of the freedom of movement and economic liberties of citizens, by keeping their businesses shut, for instance, between the central government and the local administrations. Such a confusion is not positive in normal times, but at least then it can be slowly addressed via pronouncements of the Constitutional Court. In exceptional times such as a pandemic and its management, this bickering is just detrimental for the country as a whole and its functioning. But then, how it is possible that this situation has come to pass? Why the Italian system seems so messy? And no, shame on you if you just thought as usual. One thing is speaking of the way Italian politicians behave, which is indeed loud and often hardly professional relatively to, say, Swedish standards. Well, not that the Swedes do not have their fair share of scandals, they're just more discreet about them. Anyway, the understandable criticism for Italian politics should not extend to Italy's political system and especially its constitutional architecture. Here, the criticism would be quite unfounded, as the Italian constitution has inspired those of many other countries around the world, for instance Spain, but also many in Latin America. The issue is that the constitution Italy has today is not the one that was enacted after World War II. Or better, it is, but it has been reworked, to be honest, worsened, several times in several parts. Indeed, the constitution of 1948 envisages a centralized state with the central role of a strong parliament, a weak executive, and a very independent judiciary. So, where the presidents of Italy, regioni, some administrative territorial units, get the power to issue ordinances that may even contradict what has been decided in Rome. Now, simplifying a bit, it can be said that the root of the issue stands in the constitutional reform that was passed in 2001, where the central government transferred a significant portion of its powers to the local administrations of the regioni, in a fashion that echoes what happens in Spain with its 17 autonomous entities. And one can already question Spain's model as a source of inspiration for institutional design in a constitution, given the state of affairs between Madrid and its autonomous entities, notably Catalonia and the Basque countries. Decentralization, delegation, devolution, call it as you like. Point is, the transfer of administrative power from Rome to Milan, Venice, Florence, and Palermo as the towns where the administration of the respective regioni has its seat. The 2001 reform has been quite controversial, and the most glaring proof of this is, on top of its tortured political and procedural history, the fact that it was passed only with a couple of votes of majority in the Senate House. Something that already says a lot about the spirit of cooperation and shared understanding that underpinned it, and that, in theory, would be necessary for impinging on the basic law of a nation. Lacking the approval by the necessary supermajority that the constitutional reform prescribed even for itself, the confirmation of this reform was then left to the Italian voters through referendum. A typical move of poor politics, by the way, as citizens can well be called to approve a text as a whole, but not different amendments pertaining to different parts of the constitution, not with a single vote anyway. This is the job of elected politicians, not one that can be dumped back on citizens. Be that as it may, the constitutional reform was indeed subsequently confirmed through the referendum, the turnout of which, however, was at the same time very low yet very significant. In fact, only 1/3 of the voters showed up, and of these, more than 1/3 did so to expressly cast their nays. Why this happened? Because, amazing as it may sound, the reform was not strongly supported by any political parties. As a preliminary matter, it must be said that it is difficult to intervene only in certain portions of a constitution, introducing, however, quite radical changes in it, without impacting the reading and interpretation of several other parts of the text. The chances of jamming the whole institutional machine by messing with the original overall checks and balances of power are high. An approach as such is not very logical by definition. You're unlikely to solve problems with fixed wrappers. And when politicians insist on this, it is a good thing to ask ourselves if there's someone who benefits the most of something that is both risky and not necessary. And this reform indeed favors certain specific interests, as opposed to that general of the state, understood, of course, as the community of citizens as a whole. And these beneficiaries indeed are politicians themselves. Let me explain this. The principal political area that supported this reform was the so-called Olive Tree Coalition, a political cartel gathering former and current communists, social democrats, and leftish Catholics. To simplify, as that political cartel is by this day long defunct, today's heir to it is the Partito Democratico, or Democratic Party, which was constituted by the merger in 2007 of the key political parties constituting back then the Olive Tree Coalition. At its height, the Democratic Party accounted for more than one-third of the Italian votes, no doubt a force to be reckoned with, even today where, however, it struggles to retain 20%. Now, you may point out, and you'd be very correct in doing so, but the idea of decentralization of power is not exactly in the DNA of left-wing politics, isn't it? Right indeed. However, at the time, the idea of giving more power to local administrations was not entirely unwelcome to the left, as the Democratic Party, let me just call it this way now to make it short, was the party with the most solid grip on local governments, including regioni, but also municipalities, which in Italy at the time stood at the astounding number of over 8,000. Among these, for instance, a whole block of regioni in the center of Italy, including the regione of Florence, Tuscany, that of Bologna, Emilia-Romagna, but also Umbria and the Marche on the Adriatic Sea, have maintained a left-wing administration since Italy has become a republic, which is more than 70 years ago. Talking about solid grip on power. This is to say that the Democratic Party governed at the time in most of the country's sub-national levels of Italy's administration independently of whom sat as Prime Minister in Rome. Of course, a part of the left-wing political class was intellectually honest enough not to be overly happy in principle with this reform, because they saw the risks it entailed no matter the short-term gains for the party. But, of course, it was just a minority. The majority instead, knowing, or anyway rightly feeling, that it was going to lose the upcoming elections, with this move ensured for itself an enhanced grip on power at least on most local administrations. This, of course, except for the two wealthiest regioni of Italy, those where the country's industrial heart lays, which are Lombardy and Veneto. Here, the local administration has been long in the hands of the center-right coalition, with a significant role of the party that today is known as the League for Italy, but until just a couple of years ago, and for about two decades before then, was instead known, with a rough translation, as the Northern League for the Independence of the North of Italy. Among many less serious endeavors, this party, nationwide at the time anywhere between 3 and 6% of the vote, but in these regioni punching above 10%, had been campaigning for about a decade for a federalist reform of Italy. Now, while this reform was not giving that, it was no doubt a step in that direction. Hence, the League supported the change, albeit of course considering it insufficient. On the other hand, the other principal parties of the center-right-wing coalition, Berlusconi's Forza Italia, at the time worth well above 30% of the votes, and Alleanza Nazionale, around 10% of the votes, were not particularly happy about this reform, being their natural stance leaning more for a unitarian centralized state. But in order not to displease the Northern League, with whom they were governing and still govern in the northern regioni, they did not openly oppose it. After all, this reform was not introducing federalism per se, only some decentralization, they must have thought. As mentioned, the reform amended the constitution in several parts, and in particular it redesigned, or overwhelmed if you want, Article 117, which is where the distribution of power between central government and local administrations is determined. For instance, while of course foreign affairs, defense and welfare were left in the hands of the central government, the reform instituted, or anyway broadened, perhaps irresponsibly, something called potestà concorrente, literally concurrent competence, arguably better translated as shared power, one however to be understood as a division where the central government limits itself to define guidelines and basic principles of a subject matter, while local administration then define the operational details of it. For instance, take the management of the national parks. The central government defines for a certain quantity of the local administration territory to be devoted to reserves, and then the local administration defines where exactly, how the management of this area works, the opening hours to the public, etc. Administrative details, more than proper legislative power. Here's, however, the key issue. The list of topics that fell under this shared power arrangement have been broadened too much, irresponsibly I'd add, to the point that it has impacted the form of state that Italy is. In fact, professors of public and constitutional law had to create a new category to define the new state of affairs ensuing from this reform and proposed to call Italy a Stato regionale, quite poorly translated as regional state, which is something that is neither a unitary state nor a federal one, but is not either the state of autonomies that is the definition used these days for Spain. So, what is Italy, institutionally speaking, right now? Well, no one really knows, and in fact, the Constitutional Court for 20 years now has been engulfed to solve continuous quarrels between the national government and the local administrations in connection with the new division of power in the Constitution. I'm talking about more than 100 litigations here. That's how well this reform has been written. In other words, a bungling mess, where subject matters typically managed at the national level are instead shared with local administrations, were not entirely left in their hands. Take education, for instance. How it is possible to think that the person in charge of education in Puglia, which geographically speaking is the heel of Italy, knows better or more or has more resources available than the ministry in Rome? This is something that escapes my understanding. And indeed, this power has been abused in some regioni, in particular in the north, to deepening division within the national community in terms, for instance, of using public money to introduce the formalized study of local dialects, as opposed, say, to strengthening English, or using this as a chance to enhance the national cohesion by studying cultures and realities from another part of the country. However, far worse is the picture with the devolution of healthcare, which, being a very complex and expensive affair, accounts in any regione for approximately 80% of the entire annual budget, which is basically a way to say that the shadow president of any regione is after all the person in charge of healthcare, all the others combined get fractions and scraps. Be that as it may, the new state of affairs since 2001 created what is now known in Italy as the regionalization or fragmentation of the Italian healthcare system. And this is for both the financial aspects, meaning the money, which still mostly comes from Rome, and the management part, which is to say that it is to the local government to decide where to place hospitals, which medical units to open, keeping service or shut, and anyway, how to invest the financial resources available. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not opposed in principle to decentralization. However, in a context where the subnational divisions are roughly equivalent in terms of population, size, and geography. In this case, of course, it could make sense. However, Italy, which is a country that is a bit more than half the size of France, there is no two similar regioni, as nearly all are quite significantly different from one another under basically every aspect. Here's a basic comparison. On the one side you have a large regione like Lombardy, which is where you have Milan, one that encompasses more than 10 million people, which is to say more than one every six Italians. This is more than the 9 least populated regioni combined. Lombardy alone accounts for more than 9 out of 20. Also, within Lombardy, you have 1,500 municipalities, which is 1 in 5 of the whole country. And more than 130 of these municipalities constitute the so-called metropolitan city of Milan. And Milan's urban area accounts for more than 8 million people and is the second largest of the European Union after Paris. And it extends to include parts of other regioni like Piedmont, that of Turin, and Emilia-Romagna, that of Bologna. On the other side, you have very small regioni such as Valle d'Aosta, Molise, or Liguria, plus others that are sparsely populated such as Basilicata, Umbria, or Trentino Alto Adige. Molise, for instance, accounts for 120,000 residents in total and 74 municipalities. How exactly are you supposed to have a balanced decentralization when you have such stark differences? In other words, a constitutional reform that aims at devolving power to local administrations, while at the same time the country is in the quite tortured midst of devolving sovereignty to a supranational entity such as the European Union, doesn't really make sense. That of bringing it to dissolution, that won't happen. The result is to reduce the efficiency and quality of the services it provides. The state is being pulled and pushed in too many directions at the same time, but the result is not as many would think. First, as a matter of principle, a simple basic question. As all Italians are the same, of course, why there should be 20 different healthcare systems? Second, here's 3 quick additional considerations about why this reform makes not much sense. As a matter of geography, with only a couple of exceptions, regioni cover small territories and in most cases counties of one regione, or as we call them in Italian, province, border with another regione. Hence, more often than not, an hospital in the bordering regione is closer or anyway more conveniently located than that of the regione which the county is part of. And of course, I'm not talking about the islands here. Third, the transfer of powers, especially relating to the healthcare system, was out of step with technological development arguably in 2001 already and anyway certainly shortly thereafter. Simplifying a bit, the technology today featured in a mobile phone is sufficient to manage, as a matter of administrative functioning, the entire country's healthcare system. Do we really need 20 of those? Put to the emergency test of a pandemic, the current institutional setting has produced instead the paradoxical outcome for which, rather than transferring patients during the surge in another regione because intensive care units, say, in Lombardy or Veneto were saturated, it was decided instead to create temporary hospitals within the territory of that pandemic-stricken regione, as if there was a frontier between regioni, which there is not, to be clear. And these hospitals not only needed then to be filled with equipment and medical stuff, which was unavailable, by the way, but have been ready well after the peak time of need, or they have been utilized only for a very limited time span, or only in part, or, and this is the saddest case, it also happened, unfortunately, that while waiting for the completion of these temporary structures, patients have been sent to nursing homes within that regione, where, however, they would become a vehicle to spreading the virus further in an environment where this would easily become fatal. This is just very appalling. The key issue here is that the presidents of the regioni are local administrators that developed their political and administration skills through local experiences, such as being the mayor of a town within that regione. This is, for instance, the case with Lombardy's current president. Now, I find it peculiar that anyone can expect from politicians with this background that they have the competence or expertise to manage a world health crisis due to a pandemic, something that most states struggled to cope with. To conclude and to recap, 2 pointers. First, the tension between the national government and the local administrations of Italy that has become visible this past few months is due to the constitutional reform of 2001. A reform that has impinged with Italy's institutional architecture is out of pace with technological development and out of step with Italy's integration in a larger system that is the European Union. This was a reform designed by the political class chiefly for its own benefit. Second, in light of the technological progress and the possibility of efficiently centralizing under a single chain of command, well, computer if you like, purchases, services and their organization, it is arguably better to bring back under a single management the Italian healthcare system, as the differences in quality existing between the different areas of the country are unacceptable and unjustifiable, and anyway detrimental for the system as a whole, both as a matter of principle and as a matter of fact. Since the Italian constitution has been amended to grant to local administrators power over healthcare. 2+2? I shall stop here. I hope that these considerations have been helpful in drawing a quick explanatory picture of the reasons of the apparent confusion in Italian politics and power management between the different layers of the power during this pandemic. A confusion that resembles to some extent that is more typical of federal systems, which Italy, however, is not. As a matter of principle, why healthcare in Italy shall be different depending on the regione that administers it? As a matter of fact, for two concurring reasons. On the one side, if you entrust healthcare to local administrators, it is quite clear that these people that are elected to running ordinary business within a small territory are unfit and not ready to manage exceptional situations such as a global pandemic. On the other side, pandemic or not, over the last 20 years, and unfortunately almost every few months, Italians witness an endless sequence of scandals of corruption or mismanagement in the healthcare system of almost every regione, involving all political parties. Indeed, the money flux is just too high for local administrators with relatively modest power and salary not to fall into certain, well, temptations. And this situation and the ensuing scandals have happened right in this past 20 years. The situation has unfortunately impacted the Italian healthcare in a certain, albeit limited, circumstances, which seemed, however, much more spread and serious than it actually was, due to sensationalistic media trumpeting. I wish to conclude at the national government level. In no way the 2001 constitutional reform has brought any improvement to the Italian institutional architecture or to the functioning of the administration or to any of the national services to any extent. Let me remind here that it was under the previous system, that in place until year 2000, that Italy managed to become a country more prosperous than France or the UK in 1994, and certainly one where, on average, people lived longer. What the numbers say about the last 20 years is a slow yet generalized backtracking on all fronts. The positive note here, reminding that on average, the Italian healthcare remains one of the best in the world, and indeed, on average, Italians are right to be proud of it, despite 20 years where the institutional setting has quite certainly not helped in maintaining its world-class standard. If you'd like to be notified when the next content will be released, please subscribe to this channel by clicking on the link below. Till the next time, be well.